And it's here that Alter Rebbe takes us when he deals with this thing. And he says something very profound, painful as well, that solace and comfort a person in this situation finds by identifying with Hashem on a new level, in new terms. Identifying with Hashem's hidden space, hidden world, Alma Diskasia, as he called it. You see, we spoke about this at length then, but the most devastating thing of a person in pain is his loneliness. A person in pain is in a lonely world. When you approach someone else in pain and you talk to him about that pain, you're talking to him about nothing because you're not lonely. A person in pain is very lonely. It's a very individualistic place where another person who doesn't have that pain is just not there, doesn't experience that. So the Alter Rebbe says, tragically, paradoxically, and beautifully, it's you in that position who can experience for the first time the lonely place of God. The person who has what he needs, who's happy, who rejoices with life, who has good fortune and so forth, doesn't feel that. It's good for him. Life is good for him. The person who was tested, who was challenged with real pain, can come in contact and feel and experience the intimate space of Hashem, the hidden space, the obscure, mysterious place that is unfathomable to us creatures. And Alter Rebbe says that as absurd as that feels, and that as absurd as it is to say, it's good, but it's another type of good. It's a good that comes from Hashem's most intimate level, that when it's revealed to us, it's extremely blinding. But the real point is that Hashem is not limited by the lack of our imagination. We have ways we think things are to work. We relate to the revealed projective world of Hashem and that system. Pain, Hashem takes us into His intimate space. A place that's infinitely greater than our world. And the good there operates on a whole other level. And here one needs to surrender. The readiness to dig deeper and to surrender to a new view, to an intimate view on life, to His intimate view on life. Not to judge life based on what we have or not what we don't have. To judge life based on a relationship. If you judge life based on what you have or what you don't have, it's very easy to fall into despair. But if you judge life based on a relationship with Hashem you can have at every moment. And the relationship at those moments is the deepest relationship. It's a relationship with His intimate, lonely space. Now, it's very hard to talk about this, because this is the only thing you can't talk about. You know why you can't talk about it? Because it's not an issue. It's not a philosophy. It's very real. This is really, it feels awkward to talk about it, because when someone is there, you're there. And when you're not there, you're just not there. That's what he told Moshe. You want to become a leader? You want to become a Rebbe? Before you find out about the deepest mysteries of existence and the system of the upper worlds and even Torah, you have to know one thing. You have to learn about Shalma Alecha Me'al Raglecha. A real Rebbe, a real leader, a real mentor, a real friend knows when he approaches someone in pain, you take your shoes off your legs. You're now going into a holy space, a sacred space, a transcendental space. You don't belong there. It's not a place for your rationales, for your philosophy, for your discussions, for your explanations. It's Kodesh HaKadoshim that this person shares with a very hidden, intimate, lonely place of God in his own essence. A very unfathomable place. What you should do is the first thing, take your shoes off. Go closely over with sensitivity, with love, with humbleness. Kohen Gadol went into that place once a year.
Conditional, your Abbas Hashem becomes non-conditional, like, oh, Hashem gave me a good house and a good wife and a good this and a good that.
Yeah.
It's based on a relationship.
Life is defined not on your own perspective of what is good and what is bad and how you expected things to happen. Life is based on experiencing a relationship with truth, but with divinity, with the soul. That's true. That is true.
At a different level with Mahabdha by human beings, we mostly say, well, this human being is, gives me companionship, this human being gives me
right.
love, this human being gives me... You're saying we should do the opposite.
It's beginning to appreciate Alma Discasia. We are usually in tuned and we listen only to the vibes of Alma Discalia, the revealed world. Because when you turn the station to Alma Discasia, you get a lot of static. And who wants to live with static? When the hidden world is revealed, it's blinding, it's overwhelming, it's consuming, it's senseless, it's absurd, it's mysterious by definition, and it shatters our vessels, the way we fathom things. We have a structure of what is good and what is not good. And when Alma Discasia, which is by definition a hidden world, when it comes out, it shatters the vessels, it shatters the system, and therefore it seems like devastating, it seems like a loss, it seems like evil. And if someone deems it that way, you can never judge him. If you have not been there, don't judge another person. But the Alter Rebbe, whose life himself was a real exercise, was a perpetual cycle of real pain, says, dig deeper. Dig deeper into the world, dig deeper into your soul, dig deeper into relationship, find godliness there. The next cause for sadness already comes from our own negative deeds. Here, the Alter Rebbe is not going to say it's an unjustified sadness. It's really good. Your abusive behavior was really good. No, it's not good. It's bad. This didn't come from Hashem's intimate involvement in your life. This came from the total concealment of godliness in your life, from your own bad choices. So the grief that comes, the anxiety that comes over our misbehavior, the anxiety that comes from our wrecked conduct and misdoings and so forth, this is something that warrants grief. A life of transgression, of sin, justifies remorse. So the Alter Rebbe doesn't come along and say there's no reason to grieve, there's no reason to be upset, it's really good. No, this person has abused his soul, his life. It's something which is not good, it has to be rectified. But, at the conclusion of chapter 26, he says, the fact that the depression over your bad deeds falls into you in the middle of your prayer, or in the middle of your learning, or in the middle of your business, that's not coming from a healthy place. That's coming from the evil inclination that wants to take us over through that, wants to throw you in into tivus, into unhealthy cravings and impulses and drives. Because when you don't feel good about yourself, it's very easy to behave in an unhealthy way. Because you lost your dignity. Also, when you feel bitter, you need an outlet to alleviate your distress. So therefore you engage in various impulses that are unhealthy. So the Alter Rebbe says, you know what you should do? Cry. Feel sad for your deeds, but appoint a time when you're going to feel sad. An hour or two, you need once a week, fine. You want a few times a week, fine. But make a time. Now I'm going to feel sad for my negative deeds. And you know, that's hard to do. Because usually our sadness comes from the Yetzirah, and the Yetzirah wants to make us sad when it's better for him. So dafka, when you're in the middle of davening, you're davening, you're such a lowlife. You know what you did yesterday. Fine, be sad about it. Make a time. And you know the real person, Alter Rebbe says, set an alarm clock. From 6 to 7, I'm going to be sad over my wrongdoings. Gesundheit, cry, feel bad, experience grief. 7 o'clock comes, now do tshuva. A person can heal. A person can rectify. Open up a new chapter in your life. Believe you did tshuva, Hashem responded. He removed your sin. So you have to appoint specific prearranged time when you will contemplate your past, your failures, your behavioral deficiencies. You will allow yourself to grieve over it, ask for forgiveness, and then go on. The third cause for sadness is that which he discusses in chapter 27, caused not as a result of bad choice, but rather as part of the human condition, our inherent negative characteristics that we never rid ourselves from. Here the Alter Rebbe says the sadness is unjustified. This is already something that Hashem did. You didn't do. This is the condition which Hashem crafted. It's the way He has molded us as human beings. And the anxiety of incompleteness, of struggling with evil, this, says the Alter Rebbe, comes from a totally erred perception on one's purpose and mission in life. Sometimes I feel good only when I'm perfect. Only when I'm sacred. Only when I'm good. Says the Alter Rebbe, it's a wrong perception. There's no need to be perfect. There's no need to get rid of your temptations to sin. Your mission in life is to fight, is to battle, is to combat. Every time you resist even one ugly impulse, every time you say no to a negative temptation, you create an explosion of holiness in the world. Because in the menu that Hashem wants from human beings, He said there are two courses. Hashem wants a two-course meal. One is from the tzaddikim, the righteous men, and one is from the beinonim, the ordinary men. From the tzaddikim, Hashem wants sweet chocolate cake. He wants sweet stuff, things that are delicious, beautiful, spiritual, and holy. And then He also wants another course. Spicy, hot, bitter foods. Basically, his order in the restaurant of the cosmos consists of sweet and sour beef or chicken. For the Ashkenazim and for the Sfardim. Sometimes, he says, the sadness that comes from your imperfection is not coming from spirituality, it's coming from arrogance. Because I expect that I don't deserve to have these struggles, or to have these downs, or to have these problems. He says, your expectations are incorrect. This is life. This is your mission in life. Become comfortable with the fact that there are not that you don't always have solutions. Become comfortable with the fact that you have machshava zaris, that you have ugly elements in your life. Become comfortable with that. Celebrate it. Not only is that not a reason for you not to become depressed, celebrate your mission to spiritualize physicality, to sanctify an ugly world, to smack Sitra Achir in its face. That ability that tzaddik doesn't have. So the expectations that are making us depressed were wrong initially. Yes, the problems are part of the life of the Beinoni and his unique splendor. And this is a very powerful idea that Alter Rebbe introduces here. That sometimes sadness comes from expectations that are wrong initially. And when we have these expectations and they're not implemented, it breaks us. So one must attain a level of maturity to know what is and what is not his or her mission in life. And so forth. Level 4. Even when these cravings come in the middle of davening and learning, not just the middle of work or middle of the day, so they are not allowing me to be spiritual. And this is a powerful reason for anxiety. In the middle of the day, I'm anyway not spiritual. I'm physical, so I serve Hashem this way. But now I'm trying to create a connection with spirituality, and they are throwing me off. They are throwing me away. He says, even in this case, you're having real distracting thoughts during prayer or learning. Smile and go on. You know why? Because this shows you're doing something. since your divine soul rekindled its spark, so the animal soul became agitated and it's creating resistance. How do you know you have reached something? How do you know you have attained a certain level, you have climbed another step in the ladder, when you experience a lot of resistance? If you don't experience resistance, it means you have done nothing. And this is the mistake that Alter Rebbe eliminates in chapter 28. If we would have only been one-souled creatures, we would have had only one soul, resistance would indicate that we're really disconnected from any spirituality. Because where's the resistance coming from? It means that it's all a fantasy and hallucination. So when I start praying and I get into it, and suddenly I find myself thinking about an appointment that I'm going to have in 7.5 weeks, or about the color of the tie that I put on yesterday, it means that I never davened. But the Alter Rebbe says you have two souls. And when the animal soul sees that the divine soul is getting somewhere, it musters all of its strength to destroy you. So this is a sign that you're really davening, and you're not a tzaddik who doesn't have an animal soul. You are at most a beinoni, and therefore smile, celebrate the fact that you have attained something, and go on. The Hilik Yerushalmi once said, you know, he was imprisoned in Kiev for I think close to 2 years. Because he behaved in a very royal fashion. Malchus, he was like a king. And they informed upon him to the government, to the Tsarist government, that he's a Moirid Malchus. He's indeed contriving conspiracies to throw down the monarchy, and he wants to become the Tsar, and so forth. And they imprisoned him, and he escaped, and so forth. And the Ruzhiner once said that all my life I wondered concerning what Shlomo HaMelech writes in Kehelis, comparing the good inclination to a yelad miskin v'chacham, a poor, wise child, and the Yetzirah, the evil inclination, to a melech zaken exil, an old, foolish king. He says, I understand why the evil inclination is a king. It rules our life. I understand why he's an old man, because he's considered old, because the evil inclination we sense prior to our sensing the good inclination, and so forth. But I never understand why is he deemed a fool. Why a fool? He manages to contrive patterns through which he captures most of our civilization. He manages to make people live their whole lives based on his ideals and temptations and drives and so forth. Why a fool? He says, till I was imprisoned. I was thrown into prison. And then I wake up in prison the first morning and I see the Yetzer Hara is right there. And I understood he's a fool. Mainly hangs out in open, free places, I understand. But I'm already going to prison. Why are you following me in prison? Now I know he's a fool. On his own choice, he's coming into prisons. So that's the way you know that your divine soul is operating. When your Yetzer Hara is there. If your Yetzer Hara is not there, your divine soul is dead. Of course it's not there. Doesn't care. When you're somewhere, it's also there. So smile and go on. Rabbinim of Pshischa once told his followers, that a real Jew always imagines himself lying on the, what is it called where they used to chop off the heads? On a guillotine. On a guillotine. Always. And the satan, the Yetzer Hara, the animal soul, is standing with the knife or the axe over him and ready to chop off his head. Constantly, every moment of the day, that is the level of awareness that characterizes the real spiritual person. That you're lying there, and this negative force is ready to chop your head off. So one of his chassidim says, and what happens if you don't have that feeling? You just don't have it. He said, the rabbinim says, it means that your head has been chopped off already. It just happened. So a Jew who suddenly becomes comfortable with his Yiddishkeit and his spirituality, it means he is in purgatory already. Of course he's comfortable with it. The tzaddik is a different case. But the Beinoni, the Alter Rebbe says, if your divine soul is active, of course there's resistance. That's the plan. That's the mission. So when a temptation comes into you, when a craving comes into you, don't go crazy. Don't fall into the spear. Celebrate the opportunity. Smack it in the face and gave weiter. And this is also part of the Schwindel trap issue. And so forth. And now we come next to the fifth level. And this is already a sadness that's not coming from worries or burdens. It's coming from the bubble. The heart is just in a bubble. And what causes this bubble? The ego. The ego of the animal soul creates a bubble, and this is the theme of chapter 29. So chapter 28 discusses the distracting thoughts and cravings during prayer and learning, and chapter 29 is the bubble that engulfs the divine, the heart, and doesn't allow us to feel. Timtum halev, we become apathetic, detached, sluggish, and heavy. And since that is the cause, so the solution is bust the bubble. And thus, chapter 29 is dedicated to explain various meditations on how to break the ego. And here, the broken heart is good for the ego. To break the ego, to break that sense of smugness, of complacency. And Alter Rebbe says, you know, the power of the ego is just in the fact that it makes you think it has power. And its power comes from you giving it power, like fear. If I'm scared of talking to someone, let's say you're scared to talk to someone, that fear comes from the fact, it gains its power from the fact that you're fearful. And if you continue to be fearful, that will create the fear. If you ignore that fear and you go and you talk to someone, to the person that you fear talking to, that breaks the fear and so forth. So obeying it and giving it credence, that is what creates it. So the ego is the same way. So the Alter Rebbe says, when you call it on its emptiness, it's shattered, and then your true soul emerges, and the sluggishness is gone. And at the conclusion of chapter 29, he created this foundational doctrine that the same is true concerning atheism, Jewish atheists. Jewish atheisms and lack of belief comes from a bubble. So when you experience doubts in your faith, and this is again a very revolutionary concept, every chapter, acknowledge it, but don't embrace it. Don't think you're sane and you belong in a Meshagayim Hayes, like happens often in religious communities. Acknowledge it. It's fine. Don't embrace it. It's coming from the bubble. The soul is concealed. It has to be removed. That is concerning placing your own ego in its place relative to your own life. In chapter 30, it's placing your ego in its proper light in your relationship with other people. And here is again the process of humbling your ego in the presence of other people, where the Alter Rebbe enters into a whole discussion about the possibility and the need of being humble in the presence of every person when we learn about the real struggles of other people. And we come to learn never to judge other people. Not necessarily to endorse them or justify them, but not to judge them. And I cannot really feel superior to you, because when you know what another person goes through, if you would have had the same struggles, and in those areas where you have to struggle in that proportion, you would have not been successful perhaps, or you know that you are not successful in those powerful struggles, and so forth. And that process allows the soul to emerge when the ego is shattered. The problem is that breaking the ego can throw you again into depression. So the whole reason we wanted to break the ego is to find joy, to get rid of the timtum halev, but the medicine can bring on the same disease. The medicine can cause the same illness we're trying to escape, as often happens in medicine as well, that sometimes, especially in, heaven forbid, chemo and so forth, induce a certain infections that can then kill the patient. So breaking the self can break the whole self. Rather, you see, when you break your ego, it's dangerous. It's a blessing, but it's also dangerous. You can break your soul in the process. Which is something else that often happens in the process. So here is chapter 31, where the Alter Rebbe makes the brilliant distinction 200 years ago between Merirus and Atzvus, frustration and depression, constructive grief and destructive grief. Destructive grief is depression that comes from the ego, which gets wounded from a mistake and lives with the past. Constructive grief is frustration that comes from the soul, accepts a mistake, and lives with the future. The soul is ready to acknowledge that it made mistakes, that it's lowly, that it's remote. It needs that. It doesn't live with that. There is an element of us called depression, and this comes from an unhealthy ego, where we made a mistake, where we learn about our lowliness, we bask in that, we bathe in it, we become paralyzed and so forth. Frustration is another process. You know your wrongs, you're frustrated by it, and it motivates you for the future and so forth. And Alter Rebbe said that this feeling of frustration is sometimes needed to break the shell and the smugness of the animal soul. But the best time to introduce it is when you're sad for no apparent cause, which was the sixth level, because that sadness doesn't have a solution, because it doesn't have a cause. It's just an issue of time. So if it anyway doesn't have a solution, so use it for a constructive purpose. So when you're feeling sad without any cause, direct it towards frustration of your own lowliness that will shatter the smugness and complacency of the animal soul. And Alter Rebbe continues that the frustration, we're talking about a healthy frustration that comes from the soul and not from the ego. And this is an important distinction, by the way. When you make a mistake in your life, you're a flop. You have to do something and you flop. Whatever it is, whether it's writing a paper, giving a speech, a meeting, an encounter, you flop. I experience it in my own life. And I relate it. It's a powerful thing. Sometimes I talk a lot, for good or for bad, but I do that for a living. And sometimes it's great, sometimes it's fine, and sometimes it's a flop. Vos heis, you talk, it's a flop. You don't say something that destroys people's lives, but I know when my words get stuck on the pillars in the buildings, or on the light bulbs, or on the ceiling, or on the windows, it's a flop. Why? If the words went into people's souls, human energy comes back. There's human soul feedback. The souls, when they hover in the atmosphere and they remain there at the end of the shiur, that means that they have penetrated the walls, but not souls. Now, that happens, sometimes more often, sometimes more seldom, and so forth. And afterwards, I have two feelings in me. And I'm sure everyone can relate to this in their own world, in their own profession. The ego says, your speech was a flop, you're a flop. The ego says, it's not just you made a mistake. It shows that you are a mistake. It concludes issues concerning your whole life. You see you're not good in this. What are you doing? And so forth. And it basks and it bathes in the mistake, in the flop, in how bad you were and so were and so on and so forth. The soul also acknowledges mistakes. No big deal. But how do you know the difference? The ego focuses on the past and it uses the future as a component of the past. The soul focuses on the future and it uses the past as a component of the future. The ego says, look at the past. You were bad, you were not good. You're going to try it again tomorrow. Don't try. Learn from the past. This ego paralyzes you. The soul says no. The soul is chilled. The soul doesn't mind making a mistake. You see, the ego is frightened from a wound, from a deficiency. The soul says it's fine, you're allowed to make a mistake. What can I learn from this for tomorrow? The soul examines it and says, what can I learn from this on how I'm going to behave tomorrow? It focuses on the future. The soul goes on. Depression is a bottomless pit. It leaves you there. You become characterized by it. You become consumed by it because it's extremely frightened of a mistake. The soul uses it as a lesson for the future, doesn't deny it. That's merirus versus atzvus. So there's two ways how to break the ego. In a merirus way or in an atzvus way. It's a very important distinction in life. And following that, Alter Rebbe says, we'll conclude mamash in a few minutes. Following that, Alter Rebbe says, we come and we reach a state of real joy, of real serenity. Even in light of our honest examination of our true selves and all of our lowliness, which is important to crush the Timtum Alev. And in chapter 31, he begins discussing how we can attain real joy after this. A, you have to relate to your soul. You have to begin relating to your spirituality and celebrating it. On the contrary, the more lowly I am, so every time I do something good and holy, and that I always have the ability to do, I am liberating my soul. And that is an awesome joy. You see, sometimes I do something spiritual, a mitzvah, I pray, I daven, and I think to myself, it doesn't help. I'm lowly anyway. I'm physical. I'm materialistic. The Alter Rebbe says, what do you mean? Your spiritual essence, your soul, is precious enough that you should celebrate on its account. And every time you do something good, and you have ability always to do something good, your soul is being liberated. And the more lowliness it encounters in your body and in your animal soul, the greater the joy of its liberation. So after you break your ego, that is the cause for the greatest joy of all. You could always celebrate your spirituality and your spiritual essence. We sometimes don't give our spirituality any credit as if it doesn't exist. Every time you do something good, your soul has just been liberated from a dungeon. Is that not a reason to throw a party? When you daven, you just allowed the prince to come back to the palace of the king after it being imprisoned in a pit for years. But we ignore that. We reject it because we don't relate to our soul. So what do? The Alter Rebbe says, celebrate your spirituality and you can celebrate. That's one level. The next stage in joy is the end of chapter 31, where he says you have to begin realizing that you didn't make yourself. I haven't made myself. And since I didn't make myself, Hashem made me. And he's the one who made the weird shidduch between the divine soul and animal soul. He's the one who made the shidduch. And he made that shidduch for a purpose because he wanted to have a dwelling place in the physical world. And this is a deeper calculation where I could celebrate not only on account of my soul, but even on account of my body. Because that is part of the fulfilling the purpose. Chapter 32 is somewhat parenthetical. The art of love. The path to love. Because celebrating your spirituality allows you to love. Because real love can't come from the ego. Because the ego only allows conditional love. A love where I love you because you will give me something. And that's not real love. Real love only comes when you relate to the soul, because the soul doesn't fear being vulnerable and being incomplete and taking risks. The soul celebrates incompleteness. The soul celebrates love. The soul is transcendental. So the soul is the path to love. That is true once again. It's hard and it's easy. It's long and it's short. It's the long, short way. It's the long, short way. It's long, but when you're there, you're there. This is the life of a real person, of a spiritual person who works on himself. If we're not ready to do anything with ourselves, that's fine. Then this won't talk to you. In chapter 33, he goes over to the third stage of joy that addresses existential loneliness and addresses boredom of life, the seventh cause of sadness. This chapter is not a solution for pain. There's no pain. There's loneliness and there's existential boredom. And here the Alter Rebbe says, we have to re-examine what reality is. And he revolutionizes the Jew with taking him in to an awareness of Yichud Yisbarech HaAmiti, of the real unity of Hashem, where the world is not perceived only as a creature created by Hashem, and the world is not even perceived as a reality that's only dependent by Hashem, but rather the world is perceived as a space where the intimate presence of Hashem is absorbed, is a presence. And where a person can appreciate reality as a reflection of kirvas aleikim mamash, of the absolute intimate closeness of Hashem. And when you live with this, you live with perpetual inspiration. And in this itself, there are two elements. It's your joy of having this amunah, and creating in your own personality a dwelling place where Hashem's intimacy is present as a result of this amunah, and even a greater joy from being aware of Hashem's joy of you living this type of life. And then finally, in chapter 34, he continued a fourth stage of joy. The joy is not only coming from being aware of this perception of reality in your mind, but your life remains detached from this perception, because our life acknowledges reality as something autonomous in some level. Because chapter 33 is the emunah, that in the presence of the intimacy of Hashem, the only reality, the only thing happening is Hashem's intimacy, as discussed then at length, but that remains detached from our life. In chapter 34 is the joy which comes from making that emunah one with our life, through Dalar Amisul Allah, as he said, through engaging and studying of Torah, because when I study Torah, in my space, Hashem's unity is present, and even when I have to work through giving charity and so forth. So that's the fourth level of joy in Perek Lamed Aleph. And now let's mamash finish the last few words of Lamed Aleph. After this, we can understand the conclusion of chapter 34. And here we'll conclude. The Alter Rebbe says, the last few lines of the chapter, it's at the dot, at the point. Now, in all the specific types of joy enumerated above, all of the specific types of joy in chapters 31 and 32 and 33 and 34, Ein mehen minielius nivze be'ein of nimus, v'leiv nishbar v'ruach namucha b'shas asimcha mamish. They do not preclude one from being shamed and despised in his own eyes, and from having a broken heart and a humble spirit, even at the very time of his joy. So even though a person has to have both elements, like we explained, that timtum halev, numbness of the heart, requires a sense of honest examination and a humble spirit, that is not a paradox to, at that very moment, having joy as well. Why? Because humbleness and so on is prompted by one's awareness of the lowliness of his body and animal soul. And his being in a state of joy, his sense of joy is felt on account of his divine soul and the animating spark of godliness closed within it, as mentioned above in chapter 31. So since it's coming from two distinct causes and sources, they can both exist simultaneously in the human soul. We find a similar statement in the Zayar, weeping is etched in my heart on one side, and joy is etched in my heart on the other side. The Zohar in Parshas Achrimai says that Reb Shimon ben Yechai was relating to his son Reb Elazar the deepest mystical secrets of what transpiring during the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash a little era before their life, a short time before their life. And Reb Elazar responded to the session and he said that weeping, p'chia, is etched in my heart on one side because of the destruction, and now I understand the awesome tragedy of it on a spiritual level. And at the very same time, I'm also experiencing chedva because of the major revelations that I just heard from my father. So this is the paradox that the Alter Rebbe demands from the mature Beinoni. It's not a childish feeling. A child either chedvor p'chia, one of the two. But the mature person who knows how to identify not just feelings, but the cause of feelings, can live in a perpetual cycle of chedvat kiya bilabai misitrida and p'chia misitrida, and that is the Beinoni. He is both humble and broken on a certain level, and also joyous and happy. He's constantly celebrating because of everything discussed above. And on the other hand, he's also aware of the lowliness exists in him, which is causing him sadness and humbleness and so forth. And that doesn't allow timtum halev, complacency of the ego, that is constantly within him. So the Beinoni's life is an ongoing experience of joy and pain, of serenity and grief, of tranquility and tension. The former prevailing over the latter, and the latter never losing, going out of control. And it's this paradox of the Beinoni, a life contrasted by these two feelings, that his inner humanness and spirituality emerge in its full splendor. It's in these two modes, Pchi and Chedva, simultaneously existing in our life. And every person in recovery and in spiritual growth lives with this paradox. We weep for our losses. We cry for lost and missed opportunities, for pain that we have, whether brought on us by other people or by ourselves and so forth. We may cry and weep for an innocence that we'll never have again. And the other hand, we celebrate. We celebrate the present. We celebrate our blessings. We celebrate our spirituality. We celebrate Kirvus Elokim Mamash. Because in a mature experience, this is the pain of the responsibility of maturity. This is the responsibility of maturity, where you can feel pain and distress over one condition, over a certain condition, justified, and nevertheless not allow that to paralyze you and to plunge you into despair. It's not easy, because the childish elements in us says, Pchia, let it take you over. Chedva, let it take you over. But the Alter Rebbe says, no, this comes from your Nefesh HaBahamas, and this comes from your Nefesh HaLakis, and both exist within you, and both produce its respective feelings and emotions. Just to conclude with a joy story, I know we went far over our time. We did have to deal with 9 chapters today, so... Ganze Welt, Alter Rebbe creates a whole world of sadness and joy, and they're all bound up together in a very intricate way. There's a thread that pervades every word of these chapters. I met a Yid today, a friend. He says, what are you talking tonight about? I said, the road, the path to joy, 7 causes for sadness and how to deal with them. So I asked him, maybe you have a story for me? He says, I'll tell you a story about my Zayde and my great uncle. I say, who's your Zayde and great uncle? He says, the Rebbe Reb Elimelech and the Rebbe Reb Zusha. He's a descendant of the Holy Reb Melech of Lezhensk, who was a brother of Reb Zusha of Anapoli. Both very close friends and colleagues of the Alter Rebbe. Reb Zusha wrote his approbation on the Tanya. So he says, I'll tell you a story about my Zayde, Reb Elimelech, and my great uncle, Reb Zusha. They were in Golos. They went into exile for many years to refine themselves and sensitize themselves to the spiritual energies of the cosmos and so forth. And in the midst of their galus, they experienced a lot of turmoil and tribulations and so forth. And one of it was that one day they were accused of some illegal act and they were imprisoned. They were thrown into a dungeon, into a cell. It came morning, and Reb Melach stood up, donned his talis and tefillin, ready to begin praying, as was his regular custom. And suddenly he begins crying and weeping. So Reb Zusha turns to him and says, my brother Reb Melach, why are you crying? Why are you weeping? You could daven to Hashem here. So he says, I just realized a pail in the corner. And the pail was filled with substances that halachically do not allow the Jew to engage in davening and learning and so forth because of the nature of the odor and repulsion and so on and so forth. So the Rebbe Reb Melech says, I'm crying because I can't daven. So the Rebbe Reb Zusha says, I don't understand you. Why do you care if you can't daven? Why is that disturbing you? She says, what do you mean? Because I want to daven, and I cannot. He says, why do you want to daven? What's the big deal? He says, because that's what Hashem wants from me, and I want to fulfill Hashem's will. So he says, but now Hashem wants from you that you shouldn't daven. So by not davening, you'll be fulfilling Hashem's will, because by divine providence, He placed us here in close proximity to this pail. So, and it's a halacha. In halacha, Hashem articulated His will not to do a certain behavior. So when you fulfill this, you are fulfilling a will of Hashem. So why are you crying? And Reb Melech says, you're right. And he began dancing. He began dancing, so Reb Zusha danced with him. And they were dancing for the opportunity to connect with spirituality at this moment through behaving in a certain way, in respect or whatever, in consideration of the pail, I should say. So Reb Melech is dancing, Reb Zusha is dancing, and they were dancing the beautiful melodies. All the inmates in the cell saw these two brothers dancing, and which prisoner doesn't want to dance, doesn't want to be inspired? So they all began dancing, and there became a major rikud and machail, a major dance where everyone is dancing. The security guards of the prison hear music and melody and cheerfulness. They immediately became suspicious and so forth. They come barging into the room and they're outraged, they're burning, they're furious. We're trying to crush these people's spirits, and here they're all dancing as if they would be celebrating their children's wedding. So they began shouting, why are you guys dancing? Why are you guys dancing? So one guy points to the pail. He points to the pail. Hey, what pail? Why are you dancing? One guy says, because the pail. They're celebrating the pail. They're celebrating the pail. He says, the pail? He takes the pail, he shoves it out of the room, and Reb Zusha turns to the Melech and says, and now you can begin davening. Have a wonderful and joyous week. Two important announcements. Next week there will not be a class. I'm going to be out of town. In fact, chapter 35, in many ways, is a second section of Sefer HaTanya. It begins, the new section begins. So therefore, besides me not being here, I thought it's good to have an extra week in which you can review the first 34 chapters and get ready for chapter 35. That's A. B, so next week we won't be here, but the Tuesday afterwards we will be here. Now, that week we will meet not here, but in the new building of Heichal Menachem. The library purchased a new building, and we will meet there. They're ultimately going to move everything over to there, but in the meantime, the class is moving over to there. And that is, it's very close, it's 1581 52nd Street, which is a building on the corner of 16th Avenue and 52nd Street. So it's a few blocks down here on 16th Avenue. It's a big building, 1581 52nd Street. The first floor, right when you come in, I'm sure they'll put up a sign on the door too, the Tanya class. And they have one of the big rooms we'll be using for the Tanya classes. So see you in 2 weeks.
To order additional MP3 CDs, call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076 or visit us at www.chassidus.com. That is chassidus.com.